David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Advisor with Stacey Chalemian. Today, I'm very excited because we have Dr. Susan Landers back on the show. She is part of our podcast community, and she also has her own podcast on our channel. She is an amazing woman, and she focuses on a lot of great topics to help improve your overall life, from babies to healthy living. She tells you everything you need to know. And I'm so glad and so honored to have her back on the show today. She's going to talk about alcohol, stress, and also about dry January. And really one interesting topic is the correlation between alcohol and cancer and how the two are correlated with each other. So I'm really excited to talk about this. Susan, tell me really a little about yourself before we begin, and then let's get into this because this is a great topic.
Yeah, thanks, Stacey. I am a retired neonatologist. I have been an advocate for mothers and babies my whole life, for healthy children, of course. And I have a very active blog on my website, and I have a newsletter on Substack called Moms Matter, where people can subscribe for free or pay a monthly fee. Both are available. And I love writing about healthy living, stress control, moms in the workplace, all the things that working mothers have to deal with, because it's a lot harder for us than it is for men in the workplace.
Right.
What I wanted to talk about this episode is all that we're hearing in the news media about dry January and about the Surgeon General's recent, I'm sorry, Stacey. Do you have a way to edit this?
I will edit it, yeah.
Good, okay. Okay. And about the Surgeon General's warning that he issued last week about alcohol consumption being associated with an increased risk of cancer. First of all, Dry January, you've probably heard about. It was developed by a group in the UK who wanted to advocate after the holidays and all the drinking and all the celebrating that we abstain from alcohol for the month of January, called Dry January. And they did some studies the first couple of years and showed that men and women who were abstaining from alcohol during January for the following 6 months, February through July, they drank less, they binge drank less, and they felt better and used less alcohol overall. So the meaning was, if you try to not drink alcohol during January, if you think about it and how you use it and when you use it, that will help you control your drinking to some degree. I tried it off and on over the years, and I was pretty successful. My husband has never tried it. He thought it was really silly, but I looked up some ways to manage drinking and to approach dry January. And they really make a lot of sense. One is to look at your triggers for using alcohol.
Right.
If you're like me, when I got stressed at work, I would come home and drink a glass of wine or two.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my trigger, work-related stress. And then I noticed that when my kids were rambunctious on the weekend or when the household was chaotic,
yeah,
and that was a kind of stress too, I would drink then in the evening. And so I noticed those two triggers, and writing down those triggers helped me to be aware of them when I was trying to not drink. I also wrote down my goals. I want to drink less. I don't want to drink around my children.
Right.
I only want to drink with my husband when we're out on a date. So I wrote down some goals that may or may not work for other people. And then I tried to minimize my triggers. We bought less wine. There was no wine in the house.
Right.
So Monday through Friday, when we came home from work and we were stressed, we sat down to talk to each other, chat with the kids, eat supper, do homework. We didn't have a drink of wine. It wasn't there. And so if it's not in your refrigerator cooling, you're probably not going to go back out to the store and get a bottle. So minimizing your triggers helps you drink less. Celebrating your victories. One January, I went the whole month without drinking. And I went out with my husband and had a glass of wine to celebrate, which was kind of silly. And I noticed that I was feeling kind of tipsy. And even though I was celebrating having a dry month, I also noticed the effect that alcohol had on my brain. And I wanted to make sure that moms understood, and all people understand, when we drink alcohol, the main effect is on our brain. Alcohol affects our whole body, but within 5 to 10 minutes, it affects our brain. We're somewhat sedated, we're somewhat relaxed. That's because of a neurotransmitter called GABA, gamma aminobutyric acid. And GABA levels go up and we feel relaxed. But after
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
20 minutes to 40 minutes, and with increasing alcohol, then we start to release dopamine. Dopamine goes for the pleasure center. And then we're starting to feel good. And oh, we're really relaxed and we feel good. And we may even be a little sedated and we may have slurred speech and we may have abnormal judgment or a little bit of distorted thinking. Imagine yourself in the bar, two drinks in, and do you really want to go home with this guy? I mean, we've all been there. And so your thinking is altered. And at the same time, another neurotransmitter is affected, and that's serotonin. And so the more you drink, GABA's used up, dopamine is released, serotonin is used up, and your brain chemistry is altered. Now, if you get drunk, you're obviously going to be unconscious and you might be in a stupor and your whole body is affected. But what I want moms to understand is that these effects on our body are very well measured, and the neurochemicals in our brain have been not exactly measured, but approximated by functional MRI scans with people who drink. And we know exactly what alcohol is doing to our brain. It's sedating us, it's calming us, it's giving us a sense of euphoria. Now, that might be okay for a party. It might be okay for a big celebration. It might be okay if you've lost your job and you just can't cope and you just have to drink and talk about it with your husband. But when we do it chronically, when we do it over time, then alcohol begins to affect our liver, our kidneys, our gut. I read something today about alcohol affecting gut bacteria. And a lot of people are convinced that there is a feedback loop between the gut and the brain, and how our what we eat and how well we're regulated affects brain function. It's fascinating. So the message is, the more you drink, after the brain effects are gone, or
Yeah.
you know the brain effects. You're also letting alcohol affect other organs in your body,
Right.
gut, liver, kidneys. Well, how do we get alcohol out of our body? You know, if you only drink one drink, the effects wear off within another hour or so.
Yeah.
The liver detoxes alcohol, and the liver can only detox 1 ounce per hour. And so, if you're loading up 2 or 3
Wow.
ounces in 2 or 3 hours, you might be doing more than your liver can take care of. And that produces chronically what's called fatty liver. And really chronically, in heavy drinkers, it produces fibrosis or scarring of the liver. And that's what cirrhosis is. So here's the rub. We like to use this chemical, alcohol, to feel better, to enjoy celebrations, to handle stress. But what's it really doing to our body? There's some other things that moms need to know, and you may have already recognized this. When you drink alcohol, your sleep is altered. Have you noticed, Stacy, after a glass or two of wine, that you don't sleep as well during that night afterwards? Have you ever noticed that?
You know, I never paid attention about the sleeping aspect because it's, the wine would make me sleepy. I never thought about the day after. I never paid attention about the day after, but I could definitely say that I was not functional. It would take me at least 2 days to get back on track, to get back
Wow.
to, for my body to actually, you know, to be able to function properly the way it was previously before I had the drink.
So you were regenerating your neurotransmitters, your liver was still detoxing. So what happens to our sleep is that it affects REM sleep. When we go to sleep, we have slow wave sleep that helps our brain with memory and with other functions, but REM sleep when we're dreaming is really affected. Again, these studies have been done letting people drink and then putting them up to sleep studies, and they wake up and talk about how they feel. So alcohol is affecting every organ in our body. Alcohol is affecting our sleep a lot and how we feel the next day. Just as Stacy described, the hangover is our body detoxing from alcohol and our brain regenerating, if you will, the neurotransmitters that are normal. So when we want to use alcohol as a way to de-stress, we need to think about what the alcohol gives us in addition to feeling less stress, feeling euphoric, feeling sedated, feeling calm. Lots of things have been written about ways we can calm our body and calm our mind. And we can have a whole nother conversation about that because there are so many good ways now that we know about, meditation and journaling and exercise and talking to a person who cares about you, lots of ways to calm ourselves when we're stressed. So I just want moms to think about how alcohol is affecting their brain and their body, how it affects them the next day. The hangover is your notice for how alcohol affected you. But then there's something new that came out just this week. And I guess it was because people were talking about dry January. The Surgeon General's report noted that alcohol use increases cancer risk. We've known for a while that if you drink alcohol, you have more oral cancer, pharyngeal, throat cancer, esophageal, swallowing tube cancer. We've known that. But there's some new studies that show more breast cancer in women. That is very concerning. I was reading about why this might be, and one author explained, well, alcohol is metabolized to acetaldehyde, which is a toxin, and alcohol itself is a toxin. So we're drinking something that is toxic to our cells. and it may increase our risk for cancer. A few years ago, we were told moderate or light drinking increased cardiovascular health. And everybody went, oh, hallelujah, a glass of red wine is good for me and I won't have a heart attack. But the cardiovascular benefits from drinking alcohol, I think I read one study that said it was, let's see, oh, where is that? 18% improvement in cardiovascular risk. So an 18% lower risk of having a heart attack or a stroke, but the cancer risk was increased 30%. So now there's some controversy about this cancer warning. The lobbyists for alcohol and the beer lobby have a big argument with the National Academy of Science and some other groups that are contributing to nutritional guidelines. And the alcohol groups are arguing, well, now come on, you told us it was good for us. Now you're telling us it's bad for us. We don't have enough studies. They're right about that. We don't have enough studies yet, but there are enough studies to show a risk, not causation, but risk. And risk is different. Now, think about this, Stacy. When we get in a car, we think the risk of us driving to the store and having a wreck is a pretty small risk, right? But if your streets are iced or full of snow and haven't been clean, you're going to think differently about getting in that car and driving to the store. You're going to say, this is too risky. So I want moms to think about risk and alcohol. When you're drinking for social reasons to relieve your stress, is it worth the risk of increased breast cancer? Or is it the benefit of improving your cardiovascular health? What else are you doing to improve cardiovascular health? Exercise, a good diet, adequate sleep, etc. So I think the most important thing about alcohol use and dry January is that it helps us think about risk and how we use alcohol. Does that make sense?
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. It definitely does. I think a lot of times we don't really think about the outcome of what these things are going to do to us in the long run. We are focusing on the present and we're focusing on just getting that little stress off for a moment or just having fun with our friends. And we're not really thinking of the overall risk. If we continue to do this on a regular basis, what will this do to my body? And a lot of times people are just having a good old time or they're used to their bad habits and they keep doing it until something happens. And then all of a sudden, it's the wake up call. And sometimes you could fix it and sometimes you can't. So, like you said, is the risk really worth it?
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Do the benefits outweigh the risk? And if you're going to drink champagne at a wedding once or twice a week, have a celebratory drink, that is fine. They say that women should have one drink a day, no more than five drinks a week. That's the current recommendation. And I read another interesting rule. It's the 1-2-3 rule. One drink every hour, no more than two drinks every event, and no more than three drinks in the whole day. And that's kind of makes sense, you know? I mean, if you're at an office party, two drinks is probably enough.
Oh,
And
definitely.
if you're at an all-day cookout at the lake with your friends throughout that whole day. Three drinks is probably plenty. I mean, I'd be plastered after three drinks because I'm kind of skinny, you know, but so remember the 1, 2, 3 rule. I like that rule. It
I
makes
like
a
that
lot of
rule.
sense. One drink per hour, two drinks per event, three drinks for the whole day. So if you're an adult woman, that means if you've had three drinks the whole day and you can only have five in a week, you've got to wait a few days to have another couple of drinks. I just want moms to think about what they're doing, how they're using alcohol to control their stress. I have a couple of blog posts on my website about mom stress and ways to deal with mom stress. My website is SusanLandersMD.com, and those blog posts are very helpful, I think. I've also got some resources for parents. There's one called 11 Solutions for Treating Burnout in Working Mothers. And you know, burnout is really just chronic stress. And so you can download that 11 Solutions really easily and use it as a guide for other ways to control your stress besides drinking. That's what I had to do over the years. I don't think I did it was when I was in my 40s. I think I began to figure it out in my 50s. How about you, Stacy? When did you figure out how alcohol does with you?
In my 50s, that's when I started to really wake up and think about, what it really does to me. Is it really worth it? Am I really enjoying myself when it takes me a couple of days to recuperate, those couple of days I'm not functioning properly, is it really worth it? Maybe I shouldn't drink those two drinks, or maybe I should just have one drink because I know I'll feel fine the next day if I have just one. So I really had to like space it out, and I started drinking less, and I noticed when I drank less, when I did drink, it hit harder. Where if I was drinking regular basis, and I was having my wine, it didn't hit me as hard. But then when I stopped drinking and I was drinking every once in a while, or I had to do like a procedure and they said no drinking, and so I didn't drink for over like 8 weeks. And when I had that first glass of wine, it hit me hard.
Brain going, what's going on here? You know, there's something else we should probably mention, and that is that our culture thinks alcohol is a tonic. Our culture thinks that it is fine to drink when you celebrate birthdays, parties, weddings. It's even fine to drink at funerals, I guess. I mean, people use alcohol for grieving, for
Pleasure.
frustration, for taking away your anxiety, for most people who are depressed don't drink, but if you do drink when you're depressed, it makes your depression worse. I read a couple of papers about drinking alcohol and anxiety. A lot of people think if they're nervous, that alcohol will lessen the nerves. And again, the first 30 minutes to an hour, it might a little bit, but then the effect wears off, and the next day you feel more anxious. And so we drink because we're anxious or nervous or scared or frustrated or sad, and then the alcohol just makes us feel worse. So again, think about the fact that we are in a society where everything has alcohol in it. And if you're doing a dry January, if you're trying to not drink, you're going to have to tell your hostess, thanks, I'll have a Diet Coke, or thanks, I'll have mineral water, or oh, it's okay, I'm having a procedure next week. I mean, that's a great excuse. You're going to have to give an excuse because people will say, why aren't you drinking? What's wrong? The ladies in my book club asked me why I wasn't drinking when I stopped drinking 2 years ago. And I said, you know, it doesn't feel very good. It causes me indigestion. I don't sleep very well. I'm just going to stop. And when I told them that, they said, okay, good idea, whatever. But they did ask me about it. And some people might be embarrassed. Some people might be embarrassed to talk about it.
I think a lot of people sometimes get a little embarrassed, or they get upset if somebody asks them because they don't want to talk about it. The one thing too is that's how addiction starts too, is because they take, and that's a whole other discussion we could have on another day. But people take, they drink alcohol to make them temporarily feel good, but then it wears off. So then they have another one and another one and another one, and then they become dependent on it, and that could be a dangerous thing too. But right now we're focusing on
I wrote a newsletter recently in my Substack, Moms Matter, about what to do when you love a problem drinker and tried to explain what you're just describing, that our problem drinkers drink more and more because they need the effect. It takes more alcohol to produce the same effect. And then they get to a point where they may not be able to control it. And if you know an alcoholic, if you love a problem drinker, it is a big deal because it affects not just your problem drinker, but you, your children, social situations. And so if you're in love with a problem drinker, please check out my newsletter, Moms Matter, on Substack. I have a recent posting about that. It describes why problem drinkers drink so much and how they can't control it and why they can't control it. And that's a real hard thing to watch, especially if you're married to one.
Oh,
It really
definitely.
is.
Definitely. Like, tell people some of the services that you offer.
Oh, well, other than my weekly newsletter in Substack and my resources on the website, I do provide consultation, and there's a way to contact me on my website. There's a con at SusanLandersMD.com/contact, and I will get in touch with folks and have a Zoom call and discuss where they need to go with their problem. I don't do chronic therapy. I'm not a psychotherapist, but I know a lot of health information, and I raised three of my own kids, and I know a lot about stress from having burnout and drinking from quitting drinking. And so I'm really delighted to talk to people one-on-one, to email. There's a way to email me too. I love to speak to women's groups. And again, if you contact me through my website, we can get lined up to have some great discussions with women groups. I love to do that.
I love that. Now, if you had to take today's conversation, you wanted to emphasize on a couple of important factors, what would be some of the things that you'd like to emphasize on?
I would say the risk of using alcohol is significant for cancer and ill effects on your brain and body. If you use a lot of alcohol, if you drink often, and that if you only use it sporadically, as long as you think about benefit and risk, you're going to be okay. And since we've had this great discussion, I'm going to write a whole blog post about this because I think it is so important. It is
It is.
so important for women to understand risk and benefit. We think about it with our kids, we think about it at work. And we should also think about it for ourselves. Alcohol use is very prevalent. We all drink alcohol, wine, mixed drinks, beer, whatever. We drink it to have fun and we drink it to control stress. So we've got to understand if there are risks, what they are, and how to deal with
I love that. That is wonderfully said. Thank you
them.
so much. You know, Dr. Landers, this has been an amazing time. I really enjoyed, our conversation today. I think it's really important. I think it all goes back to self-care too. You know, people have to really, especially moms, because moms tend to always put themselves last on the list when they're, and they do go through a lot of stress. They have a lot of hats to hold. It's important that when we do, pick up a glass of wine or drink, to really think about how much we're going to drink. And the long-term effects, and what it does to our body, and really decide, is this the best thing for me? And if you do want to have occasional drinks, like you said, it's fine, but at a certain point, you have to really limit yourself and keep yourself so you're safe, so your long-term health, stays, well, and you can live a happy, healthy, and productive life and not overdo it and hurt yourself in the long term. So I think this was a great discussion, and I'm looking forward to looking at those articles about moms and how to handle stress, because I think those are great things that I think moms really need to learn about, because especially when you're a new mother or you have more than one child, or you're working and you have a child, there's so many responsibilities, and really learn how to balance it all. It takes time, it takes practice, and to have those different goals and the tips and tools, I think will be very beneficial. So everybody, I hope you go to Dr. Lander's site, momsmatter.com, and look at the articles that she has and her new one that she'll be writing soon.
Yeah, great. It was a great discussion. I appreciate your feedback too and your honesty. I think that's one thing we do as we get older. We learn that our experience helps younger women, younger people. It really does. And that's why you have this podcast. So.
It's true. As you get older, you're also not afraid to speak how you feel, and you don't worry so much about, what the other people are going to think. You learn from your own experience and you gain confidence and knowing, what works for you. And hopefully, by sharing your own experience, maybe it'll help somebody else. So thank you for coming on the show and sharing your experience and your knowledge with us. And I really do appreciate you, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.
You're so welcome. Take care
Oh,
and
you.
Happy New Year.
Yes, and Happy New Year. You have a great day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye bye.